My grandma and your grandma sitting by the fire. My grandma said to your grandma, I'm gonna set your place on fire. Don't you know, hey now, it's breakfast with Bob.
Poncho Man! Woo! Welcome back to Breakfast with Bob. We're presented by ES Sports Nutrition, Cliff Bar, Timex, Roca, Tanya Porter Resort, Rudy Project, and we're on Slow Twitch. Our next guest, six-time Ironman World Champion, the legend, the guy who was the first one under 10 hours, 9.5, 9 hours, the first guy to break the 3-hour barrier, the 255 barrier, the 250 barrier, Mr. Dave Scott.
Thank you, Bob. That's quite a glamorous introduction.
Well, for a glamorous guy. That's
well,
the way we
hardly.
Roll.
The lighting's quite nice here. So
see,
I appreciate
this
it.
Nice?
This year's studio here. Yeah, beautiful spot.
Thank you very much. So, Big D, wanted to take you back to 1994. Right? The last time you had raced here was 89, and all of us were getting ready for the rematch in 1990, and then again in 91 and 92, but physically, you just had injury after injury after injury and couldn't get here. When you decided to come back in 94, how tough was that to make that decision? 40-year-old had never won here or really finished the top five. How tough was that decision?
Well, Mark was winning everything. I thought I'd kind of displace him, you know, during those hiatus years.
Yes.
After we had our battle in 89. So not really. I mean, I did have kind of a rash of injuries and kind of a foot problem, and my two young boys were born during that time block, 89, right before the 89 event, and then again in 90, and I thought, well, I got to play with these guys, but I still had this spark to come back, and it was Dave McGilvery, actually, who said, Dave, you ought to do this. I was 38++, and he said, why don't you come back when you're 40 in 94, and I think that's all it really took. I just said, you know, I think I'm going to do this and be quiet about it for a while. I remember all my sponsors had left, and I think I went down to the flea market and found some used clothes, put those on for the first photo shoot. Someone reminded me the other day, Bob, I had this kind of a yellowed top and a purple short, so this is god-awful. but anyway, that wasn't, I've never been a fashion plate, but it was kind of just maybe appropriate for the kind of the silent buildup that I had for the race.
And, right.
And really not knowing what I could do, but I never really maybe doubted my potential. I thought I could get back to a pretty high level.
And what was your first race back building into 94?
Well, you're a man of archives. You probably remember, Bob, but it was Florida. And it was
and you cramped your ass off.
I did. It was a half Ironman at the time. And, of course, all the athletes that I've coached, I said, never, never, ever do this. Don't change your equipment. Don't change your diet, your shoes. And I was working with a company, which I won't say at the moment, a bike company. And they said, we'd like you to ride our bike. They had yet to deliver one, so I didn't have a chance to practice on their bike. And the guy I was working with said, we're about the same size. I'll ship my bike out on site, try it out for a couple of days, and then race on it, you know, for 56 miles. Well, I don't know. I don't know why I was so naive or stupid. I just said, okay, fine. Anyway, I tried this really unused bike, got on it, said, well, it's not quite right. Tried to tweak the seat, the bars.
Yeah.
And then about 25 miles.
Being the bike mechanic that you are.
yeah, Bob, I'm not a wizard of the bike mechanical area, but thank you for your compliment.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, hardly. So 25, 30 miles, all of a sudden I started getting this twinge in my hamstring, and I knew my position wasn't quite right. It was in Florida. I was standing up more than anyone else to try to stretch things out. And then I got the cramp of my life. I mean, it radiated down my hamstring all the way up my back. And I had to get off my bike several times. And there were droves of athletes that started going by me. I mean, I had to stop many times for several minutes. And finally, I came into the transition area. Of course, people made a big deal. I'd already announced I'm going to Kona.
Right.
And here's Dave Scott's debut back after 5 years. And where is he? So I came in, and of course I had this cramp, and I got off the bike, and the commentator, fortunately it wasn't you, Bob, because you would have really ridiculed me.
I would have ripped you, yeah.
I think he felt sorry for me. The cramp was so bad, it threw me onto the ground. The ground was probably 110 degrees because my whole back was spasming. And, you know, of course the medics and the people said, well, should we handle Dave Scott or just, you know, flip him into the ocean, you know, his days are done.
He's 40, yeah.
He's 40, his days, what is he doing? So I was able to get on my feet, and I just wanted to get out of that area. And yeah, I remember a couple hundred yards I was out of the transition area, and just one last little thing. Finally, I started loosening up. Yeah. But I thought I was maybe in 500th place at the time. I just said, I'm going to finish this this half on the end. And I remember as I was running so slowly, some guys just passed me, and they turned, recognized me, and they said, "Dave, this is awesome, just stretching out after your race."
They thought you were done.
Yeah, because I was in the midst of it. And I said, "Yeah, just kind of loosening up at my 14-minute mile pace." So anyway, that didn't discourage me too badly, knowing that I had picked the wrong bike and said, you know, this is May. I've got till October.
Right.
I'll make it.
Right. So when you come over, I remember when they rolled in your Carbon Frames bike. It was a 26-inch, I think. And when people were checking their bikes in, everybody's like, "Oh, he's got his shifters on the down tube. This bike is prehistoric. Dave Scott, what's he doing coming back?" I mean, I bet that sort of fed you a little bit, the fact that people were questioning if you could be competitive here.
You know, I think any athlete, Bob, when you hear journalists, when you hear maybe whispers of other competitors that are maybe doubting you or putting a black label on you, you know, that adds a little bit of venom to the fire.
Right.
And I wasn't immune to it. I heard it and recognized it. But really, my motivation was to, you know, try to extract my highest potential. I know that sounds kind of fluffy, but it wasn't any different than the earlier races that I did in the 80s. I said, I want to be on my game. I know that I'll have athletes that'll go after me. But this one, I thought, where am I going to be situated at the end of the bike? Am I going to be competitive when I get to the run? And I thought, surely on the swim, I'll be up there high enough. But I, leading to that race, particularly the last 6 weeks, I felt as though my whole body was really coming around. I was stronger. I was in Colorado, and I was training on the mountains, and I had a hiatus to a Steamboat Springs for a while, and kind of had monk-like conditions. But I, you know, I relished it. It was really optimum for me. And I just said, you know, I feel like I'm in pretty good shape. If I can get out there and I see Greg Welch or any of the other top guys, I'm not going to let them go.
How did you have to change for age? Your last time you had won the race, it was 87, and 89 was the last time you raced, so it was 4 years, and this was basically coming on to 5 years in between. Did you have to adapt a lot for the fact that you were a little older? Because I've, you know, interviewing athletes over the years, they'll be like, "I could do the same workouts that I did 10 years earlier, but I needed more time off in between."
Well, I think the biggest thing, and maybe in hindsight, and certainly knowing now, it was really an asset. I didn't have an unlimited amount of time, and I think every athlete goes through this. More is better, and we know from a health standpoint that more is not better, and certainly physiologically, if you're just going long over distance, and I did a lot of long over distance, and a lot of it was very hard, but it was too much. And so now I had a finite restriction. I had two kids, and felt as though I couldn't just disappear for 10 hours a day. So my training was really very tight. It was at a higher level. I still tried to keep up my strength training as I got older. I've always been a big advocate of that. So I was leaner in 94 than I had been in other races. I mean, I could, you know, see the veins on my forehead. So I thought, well, that's maybe a good sign, but I don't want to look like that forever. And I felt my body was recovering from each session, so I was allowing enough recovery, and my diet was a little more refined. So I think all those things as you age, and looking back 20 plus years now, at 40, I felt pretty darn youthful. Excuse me.
And then race day itself, when you're back in the swim, it felt just like you'd never left. Right? You were that's sort of your happy spot. You're in this place, swimming along, and you're out where you normally are out. And then not long into the bike ride, I still remember the Phil Liggett call. All of a sudden, you're leading the race.
Well, I could see the leaders on the bike, and I knew that I had a pretty solid swim. I'm not very fluid in the transition, so I think I lost some time in the transitions. And on the bike, my legs felt pretty good right away.
Yeah.
And I knew that I was moving along, and I felt as though, you know, the leaders were up there. I could see the lead vehicle off on the horizon, and I felt as though I was closing. And of course, I have allies out there, as every athlete, and they're saying, "Dave, you're X amount of time down." All of a sudden, I got inside of a minute, and I said, "Well, I'm going to take the lead."
Yes,
I'm going to take the lead, just more as a statement, and even reflecting back on other races, and even in '89 when Mark and I had a, you know, grueling match, I like to lead.
Right.
I didn't mind him being there. I would have liked to have seen his face at certain times, but certainly in 94, I felt as though if I could come by these guys, people are going to go, oh my gosh, you know, there's Dave Scott at 40. And 20 years ago, that was kind of a novelty. We see a lot of the athletes now that are 40 plus. I mean, Crowe is a good example.
Yes.
Cam Brown, who I just saw yesterday, 43. We see a lot of 40 plus and also women, which is a great thing. Maybe my time in 1994, those athletes today are saying, you know, I can still do well as Dave Scott did. So I got the lead early on the bike, and I remember that shot as well, Bob. I thought, I'm going to go by him. I think I was going about 35 miles an hour.
You were flying.
And I thought, well, I can't keep this up. So,
but you made the statement.
I made the statement.
You made
the
statement you're there. So then, and there was a point in there, they used to have the, they might still have it, the Timex Preem. And Greg Welch is, I think, near you. And Jürgen is going for the Preem. And you're competing with Greg Welch. But at the same time, you're always a coach. Greg was going to get out of the saddle and go chase Jürgen and go get the Preem. And you're like, no, Greg. This is the race. Don't go chase that guy. Well, what are you thinking?
I think Greg was savvy.
Yeah.
And we started kind of matching each other, and I felt as though we were always stronger than the other guys that were around us on the climbs, and we'd close that gap, and they would take off on the downhill, and it happened over and over again, and I just said to myself, be patient. We're riding well. Don't force the pace. And I think Greg said to himself going into this, now that he had confidence, and that I need to wait. You know, he's a great, great runner.
Yep.
And, you know, Dave Scott's 40. I'm just going to kind of ride with him.
Yes.
And that's what happened.
You guys get off the bike, and could you tell fairly quickly that Greg was looking good on the run? He's just such a beautiful runner.
Mm.
What were your thoughts?
All I
besides his saggy shorts.
Yeah, I know. I always remember those really saggy shorts, and I said, "Well, those aren't streamlined, Greg.
No.
It looks like he had a bucket of sand in them." And so they're hanging down the back of his legs. And
you're like, "What the heck?"
Yeah, he's a wispy guy, and I thought, "Well, those are kind of ill-fitting." So we came out of the transition together, and then I immediately fell off a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't feel great at the beginning of the run, but again, I felt confident that Greg is fluid. He's the guy. And just mark him, and almost immediately he had 20 or 21 seconds. I kept hearing 20, 21 seconds as we were coming down Ali'i Drive and going out on the Queen K, 20 seconds. We just stayed that gap.
Yeah.
And ironically, he was running faster, I was running faster. Gap was staying the same. And we got to the energy lab, and I've always felt that I can run well. I mean, I have such unsightly form. It's just dreadful, but I can run well downhill.
Yes, you can.
So as we got to the top of the energy lab on the Queen K, and there's quite a descent down to the ocean, I said, I'm going to make up that time on that mile going down, hold it as we make the L at the bottom at sea level. And I got down within 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And, I almost felt as though, you know, Greg was wired to my brain at the time, because I was running fast. I was running under 6 minute pace, and I thought, well, this is a little bit over the top, but I wanted to catch up to him.
Yeah.
Similar to the bike, I just wanted to tell him that I'm here, and I know how to run this last part. I wasn't overextending myself, at least at the time I didn't think so. And I got within 10 seconds. I said, well, this is about as fast as I can go. I'll just hold it at 10. We made the turn at the bottom of the energy lab, and I felt, wow, I just let out a tire. my air pressure dropped because we had to come back up, and so I started feeling kind of beat up coming up out of there.
And that's, he put a little gap, and when you come out of Energy Lab, it's 10K to go. But, you know, in other years, I'm sure you would have been thinking, I'm here to win the race, and you're still there to win the race. But the fact that you were 40, the fact that you knew your boys were going to be at the finish line, and the fact that you were going to, that people were doubting, what's this guy doing coming back, and you were going to get second, and you know, on a day you're 51:48 swim, 4:39 bike, 2:53 marathon, 8:24.
Ooh.
8:24.
Yeah, that 2:53, Bob, that stings. That was slow.
Yeah, but on that day, to get second place, it didn't. When you finished in 89, you were disappointed, right? When you finished in 94, what was that feeling?
Well, when we came out of the energy lab backing up, Greg had a minute 36.
Yes.
And I'll never forget that split. I went from 10 seconds, and I said, gee, I lost, you know, a minute 20.
Yes.
Six on that last 2 miles. That's enormous. He knows that.
Yes.
And, you know, I said to myself, we're back on the Queen K. Anything can happen. You know, I reflecting back in the races in 87, catching Mark at 21 miles, I said, you know, Greg can falter, but I felt as though that was the bad seed to plant, at least for me.
Yes.
And he got on the Queen K and just took off. You know, he knew that that gap could grow, mm-hmm. and he was going to press it, and all of a sudden I'm hearing 2 minutes.
Yes.
And so coming in, I said, you know, I don't feel great. I'm going to hold this. Let's wait and see. Greg was flying. Certainly when he got to the top of Polani Hill, I mean, he had feathers on his back.
Yeah.
So I knew the race was over with. And, you know, coming across the finish line, really on the finish chute on Lee Drive right behind us here, Bob, you know, hearing the accolades and people knew yes. that I was coming back and there had been 5 years, you know, it was a pretty glorious day.
Yeah, and your boys got to see what you did because they had never seen you race.
No, they'd never seen me. They were pretty wee guys. Drew was 2 years old at the time, and
yes.
Ryan was 3.5. So, you know, I have this really wonderful picture that I have in my office, and it's my two boys. Drew looks totally disillusioned, and Ryan's kind of hanging on to my thigh. So, you know, I think as a parent, and when they bring their kids over here, even at that age, and certainly being involved in the sport for so long,
yes.
and now Drew's a professional triathlete, you know, it meant a lot to me.
So Drew's a professional triathlete. You couldn't get him to play golf. You couldn't get him into a real sport where he can make a lot of money and I have to sweat all day.
I told him there are other choices. You know? And I hopefully he wasn't going to follow my path. You know, there's money in the sport now.
But yes, there is.
First four victories here, I got a T-shirt, and they say, "Hey, come back again. You did pretty well. You know, yeah, we like to have you know, show up here for
yes.
the Ironman." I said, "Okay, great. I'll be back." You know, how naive could I be?
Yeah.
But you know, now obviously the depth of the field is
yes.
extremely tough, and he's had some foot injuries, and I think he feels like it's a death sentence when you're not on your game. So. I've coached him really since he's been about 18 or
yes.
19, and we'll probably sever our tenure as
coach
yeah. athlete.
Yes.
You know, I'm his dad first, and that's always paramount.
Yes.
So and he recognizes it as well. So hopefully, he'll show his colors here in the next couple of years.
Love it. How about a huge round of applause for Mr. Dave Scott, 6-time Ironman World Champion. Again, we are presented. EAS Sports Nutrition, Cliff Bar, Timex, Roca, Tanyapura Resort, Rudy Projects, Low Twitch, Poncho Man, take us out.
Hey now, Aiku Aiku Ande, Chipina Pina Panane, Chipina Panane, Breakfast with Bob and Dave Scott.
Yes! Woo!
Yeah, but
that was very smooth.